Hey, welcome to the Foundry Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to hear future messages. We hope you're blessed and encouraged by this message today.
And this is our Unplugged Sunday. So if you were here last week, and this was your first week, and this is your second week, you'd be really confused. We give our setup teams a week off. We like to do it on the fifth Sundays, and so we just try to minimize everything, just a couple of speakers, a TV, curtain, because we don't need a lot to worship God, and we don't need a lot to really come to God to understand things that He's preserved for us in the Bible. And so that's what we're doing today. And this is our last week where we have our elementary students joining us. They're going to be with us, or they were with us, for all of December. So next week, all my elementary students, don't worry, you're going to be with me next week in our normal classroom. This isn't going to be forever. And to help you, and honestly to help the adults, we're going to be doing a sermon with a bunch of props that's going to help us get through the sermon and illustrate some of these points. So it's this table back behind here. I have it covered. I'm going to reveal it. I know a lot of you won't be able to see it. I'll hold them up when it gets close. But this is an old children's ministry technique. When you teach, it's good to have a couple of props so that once we get to the third prop, kids, you know the sermon is coming to a close. So I'm going to pull this off. And you'll be able to kind of see some of these things that I got back there. Hopefully you can see it. I'm going to hold them up in a little bit. But there's an electronic device, there's a sleeping bag, and there's a pitcher. And we're going to go through all of these things. And so, I decided, when I was assigned the role of preaching on the Sunday after Christmas, that I knew exactly what I wanted to teach. I knew that there was going to be kids and adults in the service, so I said, I know what I need to teach on. I need to teach on the one thing that unites kids and adults when it comes to the holidays. And really, at all times, but they have different approaches to this. And we're going to be talking today about emotions. Kids, believe it or not, parents have emotions. Parents, you know that kids have emotions. And the holidays bring up a lot of emotions. Positive emotions, which are things like happiness, delight. But there's also negative emotions. Sometimes if you're crammed together with family, there can be irritation. Or sometimes the holidays bring up sad things for people. Maybe people in their family that they've lost or relationships that were broken. The holidays tend to be a very emotional time, whether it's positive or negative emotions. And so today, I actually have another prop. I lied. There's four props. Let me get my other prop here. Today, we're talking about tangled up emotions. This is something that when it comes to taking down your Christmas lights a little bit later on, this is not probably the right way to do it, where you get these lights all tangled up. But our emotions so often can be like our Christmas lights when we don't roll them up properly, or even if we do roll them up, they seem to always get tangled up. And our emotions can be like that sometimes, a big tangled up mess of happiness, kind of mixed with sadness, or like, I'm really upset about this and I'm not really sure why. And it doesn't matter if you're a kid or an adult, you have tangled up emotions from time to time. And when I say tangled up, I kind of mean that they're conflicted. They don't make sense together, or they're so big that they get mixed up with everything else. Or sometimes people just avoid emotions, and that causes them to not be untangled, and you just put more and more wires on top of it, and before you know it, it's a complete tangled mess. Kids, so often, I think what we tell you is that you need to control your emotions. Why are you sad? Don't feel that way. Now, that's not the right way to teach kids. I know I do it with my kids sometimes, but it's like there's so many emotions. They're tangled up. I don't have time for this. And we adults, well, we sometimes have that as well. But more often than not, we're told to just kind of push them low. Don't talk about them. In fact, there's a great book that I would want to recommend to anybody. Parents, this is particularly good if you want good advice on how to help yourself and your kids with emotions. It's a book called Untangling Emotions. So I took the analogy from that one. And listen to this quote, adults, and see if you connect with this. Christians often see negative emotions, the ones we would describe as feeling bad, as signs of spiritual failure. Anxiety is proof that you don't trust God. Grief is failure to rest in God's good purposes for your life. And anger is just plain old selfishness. As a result, negative emotions are to be squashed and repented of immediately rather than explored. Now, this is partly a sermon that's for me, because I'm really not all that good at emotions. And in fact, this year, I made it one of my goals to really practice my emotions and processing them and all those things. In fact, some big things happened. Last year, my brother passed away. And then this year, one of my cousins that I was very close to as a kid, she died. And so I had a lot of tangled up emotions. And so I had to go on my own journey to figure out what am I going to do with this? Am I going to think that these emotions are just bad and I should stuff them? Well, that's what I had been doing for my whole life. I believed, and I told this as much to my wife, I believe that emotions are chaotic, unhelpful, and a sign of weakness. None of that, well, they certainly can be chaotic, but it's definitely not a sign of weakness. And so I had to process through my attitude towards emotions. And in fact, there's a character in fiction, or actually in the movies, that I connect to so much with this character's attitude towards emotions, this unhealthy attitude that at the beginning of the movie, we see a very unhealthy attitude. So I want to recommend this movie to you if you haven't seen it, but we're going to watch a clip that I think summarizes pretty well my attitude towards emotions at times. Take it away, Lego Batman.
Talk about feelings. I don't have any. I've never seen one. I'm a night stalking, crime-fighting vigilante and a heavy metal rapping machine. I don't feel anything emotionally except for rage. 24/7, 365, at 1,000,000%. And if you think that there's something behind that, then you're crazy. Good night, Alfred.
Sir, it's morning.
So yeah, he doesn't feel anything but rage. And if you think there's something wrong with that, there's a problem with you, right? So that's kind of the Batman idea. So Batman, obviously tongue-in-cheek, and it's a really good movie as Batman kind of gets to learn how to be a part of a family and to process his emotion. He had emotions that he thought were good. For Batman, that was rage for obvious reasons. But for all of us, we tend to think things like happiness or delight or these positive emotions are the good ones, and the other ones are stuff that we just need to maybe ignore. But we were created with emotions because God himself has emotions, and that's what we're going to be thinking about today. The Bible shows that God has big emotions like happiness, sadness, wrath, and jealousy. So we're going to ask ourselves, what exactly are God's emotions like, and what can we learn about our emotions from God's emotions? Because obviously his emotions are holy because he is always good and true and holy. And so what can we learn from that? And so is God emotionless, like a statue? That's kind of how I would like to see it. If emotions are bad and wasteful and chaotic, surely God doesn't have emotions. But no, we see that God has emotions in the Bible. So maybe is God like a statue? Well, we're going to answer that. Well, or is God kind of blown around by his emotions and like a pushed by the whirlwind of emotions, almost like the Greek gods, if you're familiar with all those myths. They're very motivated by their emotions and their feelings. And Zeus was always going down to earth because he really loved human women. And, you know, you just get the sense of like, even though he's powerful, he was pushed around by his impulses. Surely God's not like that. Is he blown around by his emotions? Does he get the Mondays and get grumpy? Is that how God is? Because we get that way. And so our three items are going to help us get there. And so we are going to look at the truths about God's emotion and what they can teach us about ours. And so our first thing that we're going to realize about God and about emotions in general is that emotion reveals our heart. When we have an emotional reaction to something, it shows in large part what we love, something that we care about. God's emotion showed his love for people. God made us with the same capacity. In fact, he said it's not good for man to be alone. He wanted us to have the ability to love, which means he built us with this ability to have emotions. God's emotions are outpouring of love for us. And we see all over, especially in the Old Testament, God's heart for his people that he loves. Listen to these different emotions and notice how they're connected to love. His heart and his feelings toward the people of Israel. He feels joy. He says this in Zephaniah, "The Lord your God is in your midst, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you by his love. He will exult over you with loud singing." See, God loves Israel. He sings. He has positive emotions. But then, what if something comes and is at odds with his love? What if the people that he loves are doing the wrong things? They're going the wrong way? Well, God has an emotional reaction to that because he loves Israel, and he has a reaction of anger all over in the Old Testament and the New Testament. It says this in the book of Exodus, "And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone that my wrath may burn hot against them and I may consume them in order that I may make a great nation of you." So God is so upset, so disappointed and angry at Israel that he has this expression of anger that they did something wrong. And of course, God has his heart broken by us when we turn our back on him. And in Genesis 6:6, This is in the time of Noah. It says this, "And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. These beings that God created to love and be with him, when they turn their back on him, he reacts with holy anger or holy happiness or even holy sadness at this situation." And so we see here that God has what philosophers and theologians call affections, meaning that his love moves him. He's fueled by his love. But what he doesn't have is what we sometimes call passions. Passions are when our emotions, because they're fueled by our bodies, which we have fallible bodies that make mistakes. So things like low blood sugar, that's going to affect your emotions. If you're grumpy, if you have a headache, if you didn't get very much sleep, if the holidays were so busy and you just barely made it to church, and your kids are all kind of sick and they fought with each other in the car. Maybe I'm describing my own family here, but that makes it so that you're more prone to negative emotions. Now, they may not be fully true emotions, but they're there nonetheless. So we're saying that God doesn't have passions. He doesn't wake up with the mundanes. He's not grumpy ever. His emotions are built on truth. It says this in the book of Malachi. "I am the Lord, I do not change." This is why you, descendants of Jacob, are not already destroyed. "Ever since the days of your ancestors, you have scorned my decrees and failed to obey them. Now return to me, and I will return to you, says the Lord of heaven's army." See, our emotions are not stable like God. His love moving him to have holy anger or holy delight. Instead, our emotions push us around in ways that we need to pay attention to. We might make the mistake that so many in our culture makes that say something like this: "I am my emotions. The most important part of me is how I feel. And so if I really like something, then that thing is good. Or if I really dislike something, then that thing is bad. And so I have to just feel my heart and follow my heart." And I'd like to point out that this is the exact attitude that babies have, right? Babies express their emotions. They just feel it and they express it and they want it. As adults, we're called to go beyond that, to realize that sometimes we want things that are bad for us. And sometimes we dislike things that are good for us. And sometimes we say no to relationships that we should be going towards and connecting with. And we say yes to bad things, bad relationships that actually hurt us. James, the half-brother of Jesus, he warns about this in the book of James chapter 4. It says this: "What's causing quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from evil desires at war within you? You want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. You're jealous of what others have, but you can't get it. So you fight and wage war to take it away from them. Yet, you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. And even when you ask, you don't get it because your motives are all wrong. You only want what gives you pleasure." So we see that unlike God, whose emotions are perfect and they show exactly what he loves, our emotions are mixed up because we love the wrong things sometimes. And so we react emotionally in a way that's mixed up because we're fighting for something that we ought not to have. Or we're not loving in the right kind of order. Jesus said it this way in Matthew 6. He says, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Jesus knew that what we love is going to move our heart, move our emotions, move who we are at our core. So if we have the wrong treasure, well, we're going to have messed up emotions that are not quite correct. Our disordered loves are going to betray us by our emotions. And so, I want to tell you a story about this device right here. This is the coolest device maybe that's ever been made. This is a Game Boy Color. It's kind of like the granddaddy of the Nintendo Switch, students. And in fact, I borrowed this from the Moors, Noah and Sarah. It has the Pokemon Blue, which I played maybe 400 hours as a kid. Amazing device. I loved my Game Boy more than anything else. When I was in my late elementary days, this was my life, playing my Game Boy. It allowed me to escape from my brothers, and I could play it. And I loved it, dare I say, more than my brothers. More than my brothers. And I hid it from them, and they wanted to borrow it, and I should have let them borrow it if my loves were in the correct order, and I loved my brothers like I should have, but I didn't want to, because this was my life. And so, I just lived for this. And one day, it went missing. Can you imagine how I reacted emotionally? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. First, I reacted with rage, kind of like Lego Batman. "What did you do with it, Adam? Jordan, where's my Game Boy? Who took it? Someone has it. And so I went on a rage, looking throughout the whole house, digging through their bedrooms and their drawers. Surely they took it from me. I was like Gollum, trying to find that ring. Where did it go? And I couldn't find it. Then my emotions changed slightly. Then it turned into just hopelessness and sadness. I wept over my missing Game Boy. And as the weeks went by, I didn't find it. And I kind of fell into despair, like it's gone. My favorite thing in the whole wide world, miss it. And about 4, maybe 6 months later, I can't remember exactly the time, like what felt like an eternity, I was deep cleaning my room, and I looked up in my closet where there's a bunch of clutter. I found the Game Boy up in my closet, and it all came flooding back to me in an instant. I hid the Game Boy up there so my brothers couldn't play it. All of those emotions, the tangled up web of anger and sadness and accusations, that was on me. If I would have just thought through, I'm not ordering my loves right. I am being selfish with this and keeping it from other people, and it gets all mixed up. See, I was building these emotions on imperfect, disordered love. And I might add, incomplete information. I forgot that I put it up there. So often we are feeling and reacting to things when we don't have the whole story. And so our feelings are true because they're happening in us, but they're not helpful and they're not true in the sense of showing what's right. And so I lied to and I deceived my brothers. And ultimately I punished myself. And had I taken the time to untangle my emotions there, what I should have done is said, you know, I'm probably loving this too much. It's a good thing to have a Game Boy Color, but it's better to have brothers in my life that I care for and that I share with. And so that's kind of an example for kids, but adults, we have the same thing. You have the Game Boys in your life, those things that you elevate high above everything else, and it causes you to react emotionally and push away the people that you ought to love. See, our emotions show what we love. Here's the second point. Our emotions are meant to connect us. So it shows us what we love, and hopefully it pushes us towards what we ought to love. Let's think about God first. His love moved him to connect with us. God is not a statue. His love moved his emotion, which moved him to connect. The most important, famous verse in the whole Bible, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. So what did he do? He loved, and then he sent. He wanted to connect. He was able to give his son to get us. In fact, Jesus, we celebrated just a couple days ago for Christmas, was born a human. He was so interested in connecting with us that he took on flesh. He brought those passions that God the Father and God the Son and God the Holy Spirit didn't have that direct participation with. Like, what does it feel like to be hungry? What does it feel like to have a headache? What does it feel like to be annoyed by a brother? Well, Jesus came into the world and he felt all of those things and yet still remained without sin. He learned about stomach aches and sleepless nights and pain. The book of Hebrews explains this about Jesus and his connection with us. It says this, we do not have a high priest who's unable to sympathize with us, with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. He gets it. Jesus knows what it's like to be pushed around by the emotions, but he didn't sin. In fact, in Hebrews 5, a little bit later, in the next chapter, it says this, in the days of his flesh, I like that, that's a funny way to say it, when he had a body, when he was getting pushed around by these emotions, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears. Do you hear the emotions there? To him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. See, Jesus came down and experienced the same sorts of emotions that we do, this tangle of emotions, yet he didn't sin. And he did it because he wanted to connect to us. Emotions are supposed to drive us to connecting with others. But there's a problem. The problem that we have in this broken, fallen world. Sometimes when we move to somebody and we share our emotions, we share our heart, there's the potential that we're rejected. We try to repair a broken relationship. We try to share our Game Boy with our brothers, but it's possible that they do something that hurts that relationship, that breaks it. God made a very big risk when he decided to make humans in his image, that we had the opportunity to eat that fruit and reject God. He could have made us like robots or statues, but he decided to allow us to choose, to have loves, to have emotions that drive us around. In fact, C.S. Lewis, the famous writer of the Chronicles of Narnia series, he has this in a different book where he says, to love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safely in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. And as silly as it sounds, that's kind of the lesson that Lego Batman learns. Right? He had built himself this cave away from everyone else. He didn't want to love, didn't want to risk it. We hide so often from our desire to connect and the emotions that are pushing us to connect with others. We say things like I said at the beginning, that emotions are weakness. You just got to ignore it. You just got to ignore those emotions. We might say things like, well, I don't really need other people in my life. Do I? I got to be independent. Then I'll protect myself from hurt. But God built us in a way that it's not good for us to be alone. And God modeled for us through Jesus that it's worth the risk. Are you brave enough to be vulnerable? Jesus was. He took on flesh. He became weak to restore our connection with God. Jesus felt the positive emotions of gladness and the negative emotions of anger and sadness. And ultimately, we see that these are used to help us recognize our misplaced love and drive us towards our true love. It's kind of risky, though, like I said, because it shows our sinfulness. The closer we are to people, the more we realize how much we love things that we ought not to love or things that we're overlooking. It shows our weakness. Maybe that we're uninformed, that I forgot that I hid the Game Boy in the closet and it wasn't my brother's fault at all, or that I was just grouchy, or that everybody's kind of sick. And that's what's causing a lot of this, and it opens us up to rejection. So that leads us to our second item. This is a sleeping bag. I'm going to put this Game Boy over here so I don't knock it on the ground and break it. Sleeping bag here. And I'm going to tell a story of a time that I went camping with my wife. So this was probably maybe 5 years into our marriage. I'm trying to remember. Is that about right? I think it was about 5 years in. We had some little kids in our life, which added to our passions, meaning that we were sleepless. There was a lot going on. There was the Mondays, the grumpies, all of that kind of thing. And so we decided it would be a great idea for us to go on a getaway. No kids. So I'm pretty sure Grammy and Grandpa, they took the kids that we had, and we went up to a little ranger cabin near Leadville. And at the time, it was a busy season in the church where I had a lot of work, a lot of pressure. The church was growing, and there was just a lot going on. And so my heart was really at the church. And the truth told, I was putting too much time in it, and I wasn't spending as much time as I ought to with my family. So we did a getaway. This was our idea. We were going to get away to this cabin. And I had been, for the past several months, just stuffing my emotions in this season of work. I was feeling bad, feeling anxious. I ignored all of these signs because, as I told you before, emotions are bad and they should be ignored, right? That's what I believed at the time. And so I was ignoring it. It was a signal to me. Something is off. You're getting anxious. This is a bad time for you. You're not spending time with your family. You're putting too much effort into this. Your loves are out of order. But I said, no, I don't listen to those emotions. I'm like Lego Batman. I just keep going. And what happened is when we got up there, it was kind of a quiet car ride, not a lot being spoken. I was a little cold. And we got up and we started to do, we're like, let's kick it off. Let's do a little bit of a hike. So we kind of hiked around this place. And I started to feel very sick. Altitude sick, which I had never experienced before. I live in Colorado. Altitude sickness? I've hiked before, but I was feeling awful. And instead of opening up to my wife, who loved me so much she wanted to go on this getaway with me, I closed myself off. And I didn't really say anything. I just said, oh, I think we should go back to the cabin. And I went back and I got into my sleeping bag. We laid everything out and I literally zipped myself up in my sleeping bag. In my defense, I was feeling sick, right? So I felt justified. But she was like, what is going on? What is wrong with him? Is he mad at me? Something is terribly off. And so here I am literally zipping myself away. I had all these emotions, all of these things in my head that God built there to trigger me to say something's wrong. You're there with your wife. You're sick. You should slow down. You should open up. You should be vulnerable. But I didn't do it. But thank God I have a wonderful wife who rejected my rejections. And she kept pushing to figure out what's going on. And eventually it came out, I'm feeling kind of sick. She's like, well, have you drank any water? Not too much water, actually, a very small amount of water. And so she started to kind of take care of these problems with these body problems, we could call it. And then we started talking about church life and the kids and so much that we had to completely untangle. And we worked on it, and I unzipped the sleeping bag and finally came and snuggled up next to my wife. But we do that to each other all the time, don't we? We zip ourselves away. There's somebody right there that God has put in your life that you could connect with, that you could open up to, but it's risky, right? You could be altitude sick. There could be something kind of wrong with you that makes you more vulnerable than you would be otherwise, and you could zip yourself away like I did, or you could follow God's modeling of using our emotions to connect. It pushes us towards others. And so I want to end with this real quick. We got one last thing, a picture there. There's been a lot of kind of general talk, and I've been throwing verses at you from here and from there. The best place in the Bible that teaches us about emotions is the Psalms. They're all about emotions in there. They're humans, David and others, that are writing all about their worship of God. But it's not just songs that are all about how happy they are with God and rejoicing with God, although there's a lot of those. It shows us that it's okay with God to go to him and say, God, I feel angry. I feel betrayed. I feel sad. And so I want to take us through Psalm 13 as just a way to teach how do we untangle our emotions. How do we do it? How do we go through and make our emotions something that we can process through, we can make it work. And so we're going to go over here to this picture here. I'm going to read this. After I talk about this, there's a catechism curriculum that I take my kids through called the New City Catechisms, and it's kind of a way to teach through the Bible. And it answers the question, what is prayer? This way. It says, prayer is pouring out your heart to God. I don't have water in here. I don't want to make a mess. But you can imagine pouring things out and kind of how when you pour things, you can pour it strategically, but sometimes it splatters a bit. And I like that explanation of prayer. Prayer is giving God everything. It's pouring out your heart. The good parts of your heart, the bad parts of your heart, the misinformed part, the disordered part, all to God, pouring it out. And so listen to this psalm. I'm going to read this whole psalm. Lynn, I don't know if I have this correct in the PowerPoint, but I'm just going to read the whole psalm. Psalm 13, it says this. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? That's a lot of emotions pouring out to God. But it goes on. Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say I have overcome him and my foe will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. You know that Jesus was very familiar with these psalms. As he was being crucified on the cross, he cried out with a psalm. That was Psalm 22, where he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? You'll notice that even Jesus had a bit of a tangled up emotions. Feeling betrayed by God. You might look at some of the examples of Jesus' emotion in the New Testament and say, well, did he not realize he was going to rise from the dead? When he wept over Lazarus, you could say, well, did Jesus not, he knew he was going to bring him back to life. Like, why did Jesus act like this? Why did he have tangled up emotions? Well, I think the reality is that tangled up emotions is not sinful. It's not wrong to go to God with this mess of our heart and say, God, will you help me with this? And so this psalm shows us a couple of things. In the verse 1, when it says, how long, O Lord, will you forget me? The first step that we need to do when we have tangled up emotions is we need to engage God. Remember how it says it shows our heart? If we go to God, that's a good step to making sure our heart and our loves are correctly ordered. But it's also saying, I do want to connect with you, God. How long, O Lord? The psalmist brings his emotions to God. In 1 Peter 5, it says this, cast all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. Do you engage with God? Do you take the tangled emotions from your heart to God? The psalmist doesn't stop there. In the second half of the first verse, he kind of identifies sort of the tangles. It says this, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? You need to identify these tangles. This is something that I've realized in my own life. It's not that fast. It's not super scientific to go through and think, what am I loving that I shouldn't be? What's out of order? Why am I doing this? What do I not know? There's a lot of questions that we have to ask to get to that place. And thank goodness we have the example in the Bible of Psalm 13 where he just takes it to God and he says, verse 2, look at this. He says, how long must I wrestle with my thoughts? And that's the third point. We just got to wrestle it. Have you taken time to carefully untangle your emotions? If we were to give you this wad of Christmas lights, you could do it. It might take a while. You'd have to figure out, all right, what's this in? And you'd have to weave it through. Going through our emotions and going to God and say, how long do I have to wrestle with it? Well, sometimes it's a really long time. Sometimes it's a long time that we have to go through it day after day, having sorrows in my heart. I don't think that that's unusual. Slowly wrestling it. But it's important that you include God and you include other people in this wrestling match. It's not something that you need to do entirely solo. Bring it to God. Bring it to the people around you in your life. Don't keep it in. Verse 3 and 4 says this. Look at me and answer, Lord my God, give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. A prayer for light, a shining truth on it. Have you gone to Scripture? Have you found out what's true and what's a lie? Sometimes people just go and they say, well, this makes me feel bad, so I don't really care what the Bible says about it. I'm going to avoid it. This makes me feel good, so I don't really care what God says about it, and so I'm gonna pursue the good and I'm going to ignore the bad. But that's a bad strategy. That's a recipe for going in the wrong direction. You need God to shine the light of truth on it. God's truth reveals to us our errors. What did I get wrong? Our sins, what mistakes did I make that contributed to this? Our misplaced love. And only after we do that, and that's an awful lot of work, can we get to verses 5 and 6 where it says this, but I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. This is an expression of faith that God will be faithful, even if these emotions are tangled up for a long time. You can now ask, well, what should I do about it? Well, the psalmist decides to trust and rejoice even when the things are still kind of tangled up. I'm going to trust God. I'm going to rejoice. Notice how rejoicing is not a positive emotion. It's a spiritual attitude, joy. We talked about this a couple weeks ago in a kid's sermon. We had our stage set up. You could be sad and joyful. You could be angry and joyful. You can worship God with every negative emotion you could imagine. We need to follow Jesus' pattern. On the cross, like I said, he felt that tangle of emotion, the betrayal. God, why have you forsaken me? The loneliness. Where are you, God? He felt exposed, literally pierced. They pierced his skin with metal, pinned him to the cross, exposed. And he cried out to God, doing exactly what we read in Psalm 13. This was what we might call a holy, bad emotion. An emotion was negative, but exactly the way it should have been. Jesus felt what he ought to have felt in that moment. He used that emotion to cry out to God and still obey. And this act allowed us to be saved and reconnected with God for all of eternity.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And if you did, make sure to share it and subscribe so that we can get you all of these new messages as soon as they're available. I also want to take a moment and thank all of you who are a part of Foundry. Whether you support us financially, or serve with us, or just share these messages, it's because of you that we're able to make a difference. Thanks again for listening. God bless you.